Thanks for joining us today on CC and Doc Talk, where we talk about everything under the sun. You never know quite what you're going to get, but you'll always be entertained. Welcome to today's episode of CC and Doc Talk. Today, we are doing a little bit of shameless self-promotion, and we also hope that you are going to learn something as well. Our latest book, Courageous Money, Your Adventure Through Money National Park, is out and available in ebook and print book, and we're sharing the concepts of that with you today in general. And if it goes over well, we think that we might turn it into a little bit of a series where we talk about each stop in our little Money National Park. And today we are just chatting about what caused us to write the book, how it came about, and what the book is all about, and how it can help you be courageous with money.
Absolutely.
Because living bold is one of our mottos.
Living bold, and living bold in the financial world as well. That doesn't mean spending. It just means leaning into areas that may be uncomfortable in terms of learning how to invest or save, or even to trust myself with money now that I've stepped into retirement.
Or
is living bold, you know?
Or to talk about money because...
Talking about money is still the number one taboo topic. It used to be sex and money, but it's more comfortable. People are more comfortable talking to their kids about sex than they are about money. And so Courageous Money is really all about learning how to tell stories and talk about money in a very safe way, a fun way, because we all have these great stories of when and how we learn the value of money throughout our lifetime, but we don't talk about them. You know, to give an example, like our first car. Right. We talk about the car itself, but how often do we talk about the financial road to that car, whether you bought it yourself or somebody gave it to you or half and half or a gift or whatever it is. But there's a financial piece to all of our stories. And we really, the majority of our behaviors as an adult are rooted in our earliest memories of when and how we learned the value of money.
And that means your interactions with other people. It means your behaviors, your actions. And we're not just talking about your behaviors and actions in the financial world. Believe it or not, those earliest memories of money and how they impacted your money mindset,
they shape us.
They shape every aspect of your being. And even, you know, if you're in a leadership role, they even impact how you lead. And so talking about money or being comfortable talking about money, while it's taboo in just about every arena, not just in households and families, but also with coworkers and asking for raises and even, you know, all of that business related type stuff, it's challenging for people to do. And so what we're trying to do is make it safe and fun and entertaining to talk about money, because really it just comes down to the stories.
Yeah, we want to invite people into this space again, you know, through the stories. There was a survey that was done regarding words that are associated with finance. And when you ask women or what words are associated with finance and budget, it's all often terrible words such as dread, fear, anxiety. There wasn't any joy. Not that doing a budget is joyful, but you know, there can be things that are joyous in terms of being able to talk about money and leaning into that space of money and investments and those concepts. But we want it to be at least be not so dreadful or fearful by inviting a warm space to be able to step into.
Right. And I heard you mention on our presentation the other day, as we presented this to a group, that, you know, we originally had the idea of writing this book for women, but that quickly shifted because we realized very early on it needed to be a book for all.
Yes. And the reason this book was written is because you and I we work with families, and a lot of them are ultra high net worth, so they have significant means and significant assets. And some of our friends said, what you do with those families needs to be available to people of all socioeconomic levels.
And we wholeheartedly agree.
Absolutely agree. Right. And so learning how to do communication and values work, and then also learning how to step into what is your money path? When and how did you learn the value of money? And what does money mean to you today? And what is your relationship with money? One of our favorite questions at the very end of the book is, if you were sitting having a conversation with money, literally money, as a person at a dining room table, what conversation would you have? And what would the emotions be that surface?
What would you say to money?
What would you say to money?
And what would money say back?
Say to you, you know, be smart, you know, stop it. No, you know, I love you too. Anyhow, so Anyway, we're going to now kind of just venture into a couple stops in Money National Park. And you want to share, Cece, about the movie in your mind and where that concept came from?
So originally, when we created the concept Courageous Money, and I give all the credit to Amy for this, because Amy really saw this as a legacy opportunity to give back to the career that found her. So yes. Amy's background is she has a PhD in industrial organizational psychology, and she's been working in the financial psychology space for the last 11, 15 years. I don't know. We've done a lot of family work over the years with Inside Out Discovery too. And that always comes into play. So really, you know,
as a wealth coach,
right.
But, you know, and you're hearing new terms in this space by Finology, which is financial psychology and some other things, but
wealth
anyway,
psychology.
We
often refer to Amy as a wealth psychologist, but so when we set out to do this, it was originally going to be a little bit more esoteric, but unfortunately, we are not esoteric people. and because we have always been facilitators and keynote speakers, we know how important it is to really engage your audience.
And so the experience.
We decided, and we love to create experiences for people, so we decided we couldn't just write a boring business book. So that's where the Money National Park side of it came in. And we decided that we really wanted it to be an adventure that everybody in the family could go on. And so we started out with this concept of Money National Park, and we created 11 stops in Money National Park that would be very sort of reminiscent of a normal national park tour. And then we decided we needed to up the ante just a little bit. So throughout the book, we challenge you to create your own money adventure movie. And so the concept is, if you've ever read The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, he talks about the movie that's in our mind. And the movie that's in our mind is very individualized, right? We create the movie in our mind based on what we perceive to be reality. And we've talked about this in the context of money in the book. And one of the things that we point out very clearly is that if you and I are both telling a story about the exact same event, my movie in my mind about that money story is going to be completely different than, say,
my
sister's.
I may not even recognize that it's the same story, but I was there, and I'm, because I see the movie so differently.
Right. So, like, and that has happened as we've shared these money stories with our siblings and our parents. We realize that they've had a very different perspective of that than we have. And so we've learned a lot, and it's created a great foundation for conversations then that are less riddled with stress and you know,
resentment
or the fear of conflict. You know, these stories that come out in these movies, and we share them, and you're like, wait a minute, that's how you saw it? Really? I didn't see it that way. And then
right. It
just allows you to have a conversation. So this is really about you creating your own adventure.
So we're going to go through these very briefly, the stops at Money National Park, and you know, for you to just think at a very high level, what are some of the movie clips that come up? But again, looking at it from the financial piece, again, you know, like I used the first car. Well, there, you know, the movie clip is there, right? You see the car, or not the car, maybe the car you wanted if you never did get the first car because you lived in the inner city. Maybe you saw the bus or the train or whatever, or Uber,
right?
And so, but again, encourage you to then go, oh, what was the financial aspect behind that? What's my relationship with money as part of that story? So the first stop in Money National Park is Money Mindset Mind. And this is all about your...
It's all about your money mindset. And so there are four money mindsets. There's spender, giver, saver, and investor. And basically what we do is we walk you through kind of a self-assessment for you to determine which of these you relate to the most. Now, some people relate to more than one, and that's okay. And this, again, is really just a reflection of... It's just a starting point for you to know, you know, if I'm a spender, then that shapes the way that I view money, and that shapes my interactions with money, and it also shapes my opinions about other people's actions with money. And so Money Mindset Mind really just lets you have a foundation in identifying where you're at right now in terms of your money mindset, spender, saver, giver, or investor.
Yeah, and just my money mindset, I'm a saver and a spender.
Yeah.
I would say investor and spender at this point, because mm-hmm. One of my favorite quotes actually comes from Warren Buffett, which is, don't save what you have left after spending. Instead, spend what you have left after saving.
It's such a good quote.
I love that quote because invest first, then spend what's
and know, that's after. What that's what also allowed us to retire early. And if you've listened to our Road to Early Retirement podcast, you'll hear some of that conversation about the and your
but
your
it doesn't money. Mean that we don't spend, but it's right. just how we balance it. It's
but a, that's how it's your money mindset balance. Comes into play. Like our road to retirement certainly was about the investing
right.
and the spending.
And right now I'm having to do a lot of balancing of purchase here, but not there. So right. yeah, it's interesting. Okay. Sure. So the second stop is Fountain of Youth. And Fountain of Youth is really everything that you learned about money while you were growing up.
Yes.
And that includes whether it was the zip code that you were born into
sure.
or the neighborhood that you were raised, because there's a lot of different socioeconomic perspectives there.
Sure.
It was your family vacations.
If you had them.
If you had them.
Right.
And, was it this in the station wagon driving across the country with the St. Bernards drooling on you with the windows down because there was right. no, air conditioning. Anyway, because there's a story there. Right. Family vacations have a lot of money stories in it.
And there's also the piece about schooling, like what type of school did you go to?
Yep.
Household configuration, I think, is an interesting one. Why don't you speak to that one briefly?
Yeah. Household configuration is really... were you in a household that stayed together, your parents stayed together, the traditional, were they divorced? Was it a single parent, adopted parents, a blended family?
Same sex parents.
And so
transgender parents.
Yeah. And so looking at that from a, the configuration and how the money flowed to and through right. the household and the household finances. And so household configuration is around that. Family transportation, was there one car, many cars, a lease, a new car every year, the same car, everybody had to share.
Right.
There's a lot of money stories in your family transportation.
And gift giving, like what types of gifts did your family give? How was Christmas? Was it a very sort of equal, if you had multiple siblings, was it sort of a very equal distribution type of Christmas gift giving? Or like in Amy's case, her
blended
family.
Divorced.
Her parents were divorced, and so she got much more extravagant gifts from one parent than she did from another because one parent ended up less off financially in the mix, and so one parent was buying you underwear and socks while the other one was buying extravagant gifts and what
hockey tables, yeah,
and how that messaging impacted.
And I felt
your
the love in both. I mean, so it didn't come down to that piece, but it was in terms of money messages, there was a big disparity, and I was able to learn a lot because of that out
right.
of observing
sure.
and being the recipient of that. So, all right, so that's Fountain of Youth. Again,
yeah.
I think we'll do a deeper dive into many of these later as an individual series. But
I think it would be really
fun to think about. Yeah. So the next stop along the Money National Park is Gender Mountain. And there are so many money messages wrapped into gender that we don't even know that they're there. I mean, there's the obvious ones in terms of what genders are encouraged to do, what sorts of careers and degrees. In the past, a lot of men were encouraged to do the higher paying jobs, the lawyers, the doctors. And women now are being more encouraged to be in the STEM jobs, which is the science, technology, engineering, and math.
Right.
But that wasn't always the case. And
heck
so
no.
There's a lot of societal pressures and cultural pressures.
I went to high school with a lot of women who became nurses because of those sort of gender stereotypes
yeah.
in a small Midwestern town.
Yeah. And the gender pay gap is still huge out there. And then you bring in the ethnic diversity and the pay gap is even greater.
Right.
And so these things, there's a lot of, money stories there regarding gender.
And even today, especially examining the whole gender nonconformity or the whole gender non-binary piece of it and how we look at things and stereotype based on those
right.
scenarios as well. And so, Gender Mountain in this case is fairly inclusive of really looking at that. But again,
it's not just the male,
female,
it's huge.
We're looking at it from the financial perspective and, what's the financial impact? And so, really examining, and what were the gender biases or gender messages and how they have impacted your life.
Well, I'm going to give you an example of how it's so much more than what we think. And that is regarding marketing. And did you know that little boys and your little girls' clothing are made differently? And boys' clothing is often made of more sturdy material. It's blue or black and has super something on it to give them that confidence. And little girls' clothing is thinner, pinker material, more delicate fabrics. And they, you know, they want to encourage them to be that princess and you get to be taken care of. And so I got to give kudos to Target Corporation because they're like, oh yeah, no, we want to get rid of this. And so they're trying to source vendors that are equalizing more of that. And so gender in terms of pay and gender in terms of the cultural pressures and the money messages and is huge.
It really is. And I want to go back for 1 second. I believe nursing is one of the hardest things that people can do. And so I definitely wasn't disparaging nurses by saying so many women that I went to high school with ended up nurses.
It was just more traditional.
What I'm saying is that, you know, some of those nurses probably would have chosen to be doctors if they had been encouraged in that direction. But in my day and age, which really wasn't that long ago, that we told girls they could be nurses and teachers is how it was. But nurses, as far as I'm concerned, especially these days, they're the best people in the world.
And you would have been a phenomenal doctor.
Thank you.
So, but yet, which leads to then our generation, because the various generations, and whether it's the traditionalist born before 45, Generation Trail. So our next stop in the park is Generation Trail, and it's all about generations and the different generations, and you all know them. It's the silent generation or the traditionalist born before 45, baby boomers somewhere between 46 and 64, Generation X between 65, born between 1965 and 1980.
Yay, Gen X!
Woo-hoo! Millennials, the forgotten generation in there.
But we are so not. I disagree with that vehemently, but that's a different book.
But they're not the one just focused on and studied and right. referenced all the
I
time.
Know.
So millennials and Gen Ys, born between 61 and 1981 and 1996. And then Gen Zs, or the digital natives, born after 1997 up to about 2012-ish.
Yeah.
So anyway, the mini series that we do, we would get into this a little bit more. But we know some of the world events that are associated with these different generations.
Yes.
What we want to do is specifically look at what were the money messages that were shared within each of these generations.
And how those events affected finance and money situations as well. You know, certain events were so cataclysmic to the economy that there was an individual financial impact to people of those generations. So how did the money side of it come to
play? One of the big events with the whole digital natives and the millennials is the access to electronics.
Right.
And how now smartphones, you know, not only, but across the world, everybody can have access to a smartphone, and they do. But now they also have access to their finances in the palm of their hand.
Right.
You have access to investments in the stock market and all those things right in the palm of your hand, which has opened up a lot of, and again, stereotypical, women and girls access to being informed and in the know of their finance side of their world.
So true. Because did you know that, you're going to have to help me with the year, it was in the 1970s, women couldn't get a mortgage by themselves without having a man to co-sign for them.
It was the Fair Credit Act at 1973. And by the way, Ruth Bader Ginsburg was instrumental in making sure that women had access to credit, a credit card or their own mortgage.
Yeah, yes. Could you imagine Ruth Bader Ginsburg feeling like she had to rely on her husband to get a mortgage?
No. All right.
Anyway, so I'm just saying, like, some of this stuff really wasn't that long ago. We are still truly evolving, and don't get me started, but some days I think we're going backwards, but we're going to keep moving ahead.
All right, let's go to the next stop in Money National Park. Culture Crater. And culture is everything that is external that has impacted you that we haven't discussed so far. And that's maybe it's your native roots, your social influencers, you know, the clubs or the not the clubs that you are involved with, the religious organizations.
Did your parents belong to the country club or the bowling league?
Right. Or, you know, the beer or the scotch club, you know. So cultural references around attitudes, social patterns, values, beliefs, systems, the shared norms within that specific groups.
Yes.
And so that's what the culture is all around. And so looking at what are the money messages that were learned along the way with your social groups and the culture that you grew up in, or the heritages that you were part of, or religious organizations.
And I feel like it's important at this point to mention the book is set up as truly like a self-guided tour through the national park. And what we do is we give you an opportunity, we give you story sparks. which allow you to...
The entire book is a list of questions.
story sparks and questions that get you really thinking about your own money stories. And it gives you a kind of a roadmap, so to speak, to be able to, you know, you could throw out one of these story sparks at your next holiday dinner and get everybody around the table to share a story. And it will ultimately create this beautiful conversation that really centers around money and finances. And you might learn a ton. We have people that we interviewed for this book who, you know, are now having conversations with their families, and they're learning things that they never knew before about their ancestors and how they managed money. And it's been so exciting to watch. And then we also include in each of these sections a means for you to say, I either accept this money message as my own and it's still serving me, or maybe I got this money message from somebody else and it really doesn't serve me and I really don't like it and I don't want to carry it around with me anymore. So you get the opportunity to reject it, or you can revise it and you can say, right, you know what, this kind of serves me, but if I could choose the new path forward, it might look more like this. And so we give you the opportunity to do that at every stop in the park. So story sparks and then the reflection piece and really trying to figure out how...
Is it still serving you? A perfect example, right? I was raised Lutheran and we were taught you tithe 10%. And as I grew older, I haven't been now in a Lutheran church in years.
Right.
But, you know, I have this ingrained thing. You have to tithe and give 10%. And so is that still serving me today? And or do I need to reevaluate or reaffirm it? And so anyway, so it gives me an opportunity to at least consciously take a look at it to make it mine. What do I want to do with my giving? What do we want to do as a couple with our giving? And so...
Well, and you actually did sort of revise that. Like you still give. It's just that you don't give it all to a church now. We divide it up amongst charities that we evaluate each year and we decide, you know, so we're
and then we
still
look for matching gifts opportunities to double the impact of it. And so, I mean, so it allowed us to reevaluate it and redefine giving for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, philanthropy is still very important to us. It just may not look the same and it may not all go into one pot.
And it was all came out of one money message that we both learned years ago.
Right. So this is what the book will allow you to do in each of these, with each of these stops and each of these topic areas.
It's kind of just stop and take a look and go, is that still serving me?
Exactly. Yeah.
So let's go to the next stop in the park. And this is wildlife viewing area. And this is all about sibling dynamics.
Yeah.
And
we also talk about birth order in this one. We talk about ordinal birth order, which is your true birth order based on chronology. But then there's also a psychological birth order in blended families that comes up a lot, and we can get into that in a moment. But let's go back to the wildlife viewing area and how we mapped that out.
So the sibling dynamics, I mean, again, we learn money messages. I mean, there's stories, one of the people that we interviewed where, you know, he spent all of his money creating an album, a record collection, and then his brother went and stole it and sold it on him. So there are money messages with siblings out there. And so for you to take a look at yours and what's your movie, we actually also created a list of national parks and have them symbolically speaking, what do they represent in terms of a family? Of sibling dynamics. So we'll do a couple examples of them. Like Yosemite is symbolic of the only child because nothing stands out like El Capitan, right?
Right.
The Serengeti is all about family first and protecting one another. Yellowstone National Park is all about being geographically dispersed. Mm-hmm. The Great Sand Dunes National Park is very hot during the summer day, but at night can be very cold. And so the hot and cold dynamics with the siblings. Mm-hmm. The Grand Canyon, very large gaps between siblings and with a big canyon in between. Not sure if you're able to cover that gap or not.
Yeah. And there's several more of these. We actually have 12. We cover 12 of these in the book, so we won't give you them all today.
Right. But it gives you an idea. Then you get to say, okay, which one do I relate with and why? Right. And then what's the money, the financial, the relationship with money element side
of that? And we also cover the blended family in that. And then we talk about what's your birth order. So, you know, we've got the firstborn, the middleborn, and the youngest. And then you have, of course, the only child. And there are specific traits that go along with each of these, which we discuss in the book. And there's the, like I said, there's the chronological birth order. So, you know, I am by age the youngest child, and I have many traits of the youngest child, But then there's also a psychological birth order. But because there's such a large gap between my sister and myself, it's 4 years, and anything like 4 years and up, you can then take on some traits of the firstborn. And yeah. So psychologically, I do have some traits of the firstborn, but chronologically or ordinally, I am definitely the youngest child and I have those traits.
And similar to when we looked at generation, you know, here's all these traits, but then what does that mean in terms of finances? What is that in terms of money?
Yes.
And so we take a look at the birth order in terms of
how it relates to spending, saving, giving, investing.
Right. And, you know, again, a quick example is like a firstborn is more likely to hold a CEO, VP, or a senior management position. Mm-hmm. Where what are the traits of the youngest child? Well, I guess you're going to have to wait to find out.
Well, so, and speaking
the
of
financial traits for the youngest child. Yeah.
Sorry. Speaking of youngest child, I will share. So Amy is a member of a blended family, and she and her youngest stepsister are close in age. But Amy was always the youngest and her sister was always the youngest. And so in terms of psychological birth order, you know, that can sometimes in blended families bring up
Both the youngest children.
That bit of a conflict of who really gets to be the youngest, because, you know, we all know the youngest are spoiled rotten and get to be the favorite, right? No, that is not true. Just kidding.
Well, you know, the trait for the youngest, I'll spill the beans here. They are the most likely to take career risks and test the limits. So they usually end up either well off or broke. So we'll just move right along on that one. All right. So career, the next stop at Money National Park
is the park gift shop. My favorite, because I get to spend my own money.
Woohoo!
When it comes to money, we talk very much about the idea of yours, mine, and ours, okay? So there's money has different buckets. So yours bucket, it's all yours. The my bucket, it's all mine. And the ours bucket, which is commingled funds. And so the park gift shop stop is truly about your first experience with being able to spend your own money, money that is yours, that belongs to you, that you don't have to share with anybody else. You don't have to loan it to anybody. And so things like the allowance, your allowance, like things that came from, say, your allowances or maybe your first job or your, you know, your first car, if you bought your first car, home ownership. And then we talk a little bit about what are your status symbols. So, you know, like for some people, it's purses and watches, and other people, it's cars. And for Amy, it's jackets and toys.
That's funny.
Like wood splitters and chainsaws and tools and things like that. And, you know, I have a penchant for shoes and watches, and we both really love rocks of all types. So anyway, this park gift shop model really lets you look at, you know, what
do you have a status symbol and or spending your money,
yep,
or what you mentally perceive as
and
your money.
And how did spending your money feed into your identity and how all that worked together. So that's the park gift shop. So that's a really fun yeah, stop.
So as long as we're talking about the yours, mine, and ours, mm-hmm, regarding finances, the next stop in the Money National Park is the ours, where you're managing the shared funds or shared decision-making around funds, and that's Currency River.
Yes.
And with this, there's a visual of a money bridge, and in the middle of the bridge is a shared partnership where everybody is equally involved and equally in the know of the finances and the money, the household money. And
it's a partnership.
It's a partnership, true, yep, partnership. You know where to go, you know what's there, and it's very easy. But if you were to go to the extremes of the bridge, as you move out to the ends of the bridge, and it's not as much of a partnership, you have, I'm just going to go to the one end of the bridge, you have the victim at one end of the bridge, and at the opposite end of the bridge is then the controller. And usually those two go hand in hand. Somebody's controlling all of the funds and the access and the investments, and the person at the other end is the victim and doesn't know what's there, or it's the completely separate accounts that you know, you're not commingled at all,
or they're just
doing your own thing.
So if
clueless
so
or
something,
whatever.
So if some tragic event happens, they would never know where to go or how to find things. And I always feel like it's important to point out that the controller is not always, you know, we say the word controller and you get in your mind the idea of an abuser and that type of thing. And while that could be the case, that isn't so much what we're talking about here. It's just sometimes
it's the person that's in the know of all the finances, and the partner that they're working with knows nothing.
And sometimes this is about upbringing and generation too. It's what people were taught.
So as you move closer to the center of the bridge, which was that true partnership, stepping out of that victim controller then becomes the next step in is the follower. So the victim becomes the follower and the controller becomes the provider. And again, there's more about this in the book about how do you move and what
and
is
that's
the,
a less that's a less equal interaction than the partnership, but at least it assumes that the follower has some knowledge and at least enough if something tragic were to occur, and the provider is willing to at least give a heads
teach
up
and
where
know,
things are and how to access.
They're not coordinate. Yeah,
totally.
Yeah. All right, so there's so much more about managing shared money and shared decision making available. But we're going to move on to the next stop in Money National Park.
Life falls.
Life falls are the events, the life-changing events that occur and...
Sort of like what we're dealing with now with my cancer diagnosis.
Yes, that where you had to reevaluate things. And this is usually by death, by divorce, by diagnosis, or by choice, whether it's a closing of business, a loss of a job, change of a job.
A pandemic.
And we're also doing a life falls because of my retirement.
Yeah.
Because it's causing us to reevaluate
even
a
though
lot
it's,
of
even
things.
Though it's positive, it is an event that causes
but
you
it's
to
a little
really,
bit of anxiety around sure. the financial side of it. And
totally.
So
we're just all about the life falls right now. We're living
right.
in the life falls.
So it causes the cognitive changes. It's like, oh, okay, we have to reevaluate things or I have to do things a little bit differently. So
Absolutely.
So we get into what does life falls. Well, the entire world just experienced life falls with the pandemic.
Yeah.
And you look at what people had to do to adjust financially
right.
to many situations that happened to them.
Right.
I mean, even what we were all willing to pay for toilet paper is part of that. So.
Right. And we're at the highest inflation rate in 40 years. And the other thing that I will say is that think about the people of the Ukraine who up until very recently had a life very similar to most of us in America. And now, I mean, talk about a life falls event.
And the majority of them don't have food even right now.
Right.
I mean, the basics.
So how do you navigate those events and how do you look and reevaluate the whole finance side of that and the money side of that and come out on the better end?
Yeah.
You know,
so
the,
many of these
you want to be the person
walk away from everything.
You want to be the person who goes down Niagara Falls in the barrel and
survives.
Exactly.
It's a great analogy.
<Thank you. laughs>
The whitewater rafting over the class flies,
exactly.
You know. Tall Tales Campground.
You love this one.
Well, this is
I never tell my deepest, darkest secrets, but you love this.
This is one of the final the stops at Money National Park, and it's the Tall Tales Campground. And these are your deepest, darkest money secrets for those of us that are willing to share them. I'm not going to share mine here. I'll save that for our mini series. But this is these are the things
it, she
that,
shared it in the book, though.
This is the
she
stories about. You know, shoplifting as a kid, or hopefully not as an adult, but, you know, if you have something in your cart that you didn't pay for, do you go back in or do you see it as a gift?
Did you use your school lunch money for something other than lunch? Or did you buy, or did you go to the vending machine and buy all the crap food instead of the good, nutritious lunch that you were supposed to buy?
Or somebody goes to pay for something and there's change that comes back and you kind of squirrel that change into your pocket or your purse? So these are just kind of those the funny behaviors around money that are a little bit deeper, darker, kind of, you know, that you can hopefully laugh about them now.
And how did they impact, again, how do they impact your money messaging and how did they impact your life and actions around money?
Yeah, my story about shoplifting as a child scared the bejesus out of me that to this day, if there's something in my cart and I realize that in the parking lot, I have to go back in because I don't want bad karma with
right.
that. And because I still had the fear of that general manager.
So true.
Yeah. Anyway,
so true.
We're moving on. Shooting stars.
This is our last stop.
Last stop in the park.
Last stop in the park. And really, this just comes down to reevaluating what insights did you gain regarding your relationship with money, having now, you know, read the book, shared stories. And again, you can pick and choose the story sparks you use. We find that we might give you a list of 15 story sparks and you might just really gravitate toward one, and that's perfectly fine. And then really to talk about with others, you know, what was your favorite, most memorable scenes and what, you know, what are you taking away from the conversations that you're now being able to share? Because we really, really, really encourage you to share these stories with each other so that you can learn from one another.
Right. And we all like to go out and stargaze and see a shooting star. It's a magical experience. And what we don't realize is when you literally go out to sit and watch shooting stars, you can go for hours before you see just one.
Right.
So this is that time to just sit there and contemplate
mm-hmm.
and that memorable experience. And then all of a sudden that shooting star happens in your brain or in your movie. It's like, oh my gosh.
Absolutely.
That was a money message that I did not realize was impacting so much of how I'm raising my kids, how I'm behaving, or the job, or my career choice, or whatever it is. It's that, like, oh my gosh, type moment. All right.
And so, some of you might be interested to know that as a part of the book, we, Amy and I, actually went through each of these stops in the park ourselves, did the story sparks, and we share our stories at the end of the book. Some people would be very interested in that. Some people could care less, but yeah. I'm sharing that because we went through the process ourselves, and we are continuing to do so.
It was very insightful for
me.
It
was.
Absolutely.
It was. And I think our interviews were so insightful as well. I mean, we learned so much from people. It was just fabulous.
Right. And I think if I were to look back right now, again, as I wrote my story, I'm like, can I trust myself with money is my thing. And so again, we talked about if
well, I trust you with money. I hope you can trust yourself with money.
I like to spend money. You know? Anyway, if money were a person sitting with you at the dining room table, what would you say and what would money say back to you? We talked about that in the beginning. And so these are just, again, reflective things for you to really understand, because I mean, I can't stress this enough. The majority of our behaviors as an adult are rooted in the earliest memories of when and how we learned the value of money. And we never stop learning these things, and you can reevaluate it and reassess it and rewrite it. So
certainly, that is absolutely true. We invite you to join us at Money National Park on social media. You're also welcome to join us on our website at moneynationalpark.com. The book is available. We made the ebook very affordable and very accessible for everybody at $9.99. The print book is a little bit more. We still don't make any money off of it, but because of the whole print on demand process, the print book is a little bit more.
It's still under
$20. Yeah. But if you can pick up the ebook, it's certainly your cheaper option. But we are offering currently a free membership on the moneynationalpark.com website. At some point, that membership will carry a fee. But right now, because we are dealing with a life fall of event, we aren't posting as much content out there as we will at some point in the future. But really, you really don't need us that much. You can just pick up the book.
It's a self-guided tour. Grab it and on your next car ride or vacation this summer.
And or if you're a member of a book club, introduce it to your book club and start sharing stories within your book club. Amy and I are available for virtual presentations only at this point in time, but we are available if you need a little bit of extra guidance. But you can it serves as a self-guided tour and even a leader guide. So
yep. I was gonna say, grab the book and ask questions on your family vacation this summer.
Oh,
it should be
so
fun.
Much fun road trips. All right, have a wonderful day, everybody, and live bold.
Thanks for tuning in to CC and Doc Talk. We'd love for you to follow us on social media at CC and Doc. That's CCNDOC. And you can visit our website at ccanddoc.com. We also take monthly donations to support this broadcast if you're so inclined. We'd love to hear your comments, suggestions, and questions, and we'll do our best to respond. Thanks, and have a fantabulous day.